This is an original podcast from the Costry, the newest podcast people on the podcast block. Please be entertained or educated or both.
Hey.
Hi.
How's it? It's us.
It's myself and Hunter. We just got off an amazing interview with Jonathan Ayash, who is the CEO of Lyft, a brand new airline. Well, we say brand new, they launched last year, 2020, in December.
Well, it is new, and they launched in the middle of a pandemic, which is crazy.
And in this episode, I find it quite interesting to find out how a company is trying to change the idea of aviation in South Africa. I think it's like we're talking about things like that have always been in place that are irritating. You had a mention of one earlier with luggage.
No, but it's just all of that stuff, man. Well, what was the most interesting to me is what he was saying, that they are telling their employees to use common sense, which I think is a spectacular idea, and which is probably the most frustrating when you're struggling at the airport with something like your name was spelled wrong. It's not the same as... Do you remember at a stage Mango asked you for the credit card that you booked the ticket with, and we never booked our own tickets. So it was always a fucking problem.
So that's the thing. In this episode, I think you're going to find it quite interesting. If you're into aviation and you want to find out a lot of things that are happening, well, that's going to be happening in the future of aviation, and with a company like Lyft who are challenging the ideals that are or have been in place for years, I think you're really going to like this episode. Hello.
Hi.
It's us again.
How's it going?
Good and you?
Hi guys. Jonathan.
Hi, guys.
Jonathan Ayash is with us. Myself and Hans, we got our first guest of the new round. I don't know, do we call this a new round?
Why not?
We'll call it a new round. It's fun. It's cool. As is tradition, though, on the podcast, we have an intro for our guest. A written Hunter is, obviously, I don't know whether you know, he's a musician. He writes a lot of things, and we get him to write our intros.
Are you going to sing it?
I'm not going to sing it, no.
Can I beatbox behind it?
You can.
Let me try.
Okay. I like it. You can go for it.
No. Stop that.
But a member of the Golden Key International Honor Society, UCT bursary recipient for CFA Level 1 on the Dean's Merit List for Academic Excellence, Uber startup architect challenging the norms of business as usual in Africa, a statistician, computer scientist, data analyst, and Herzliya Boyki from the seaside taking on the top dogs in a sphere where few dare to spread their wings. He's tenacious, he's innovative, with his head in the clouds, ears to the ground, and the customer's best interests at heart. He's a man of the people from the future. Lift your hands in the air for an honest fare. Buckle your seatbelts in case of emergency. Let's do this damn thing. It's Jonathan Ayash.
Wow, what an intro. You went back quite far.
I went to your LinkedIn page.
Okay.
But it is impressive.
Thank you. I probably need to clean some of that up. You didn't mention my matric results or...
No, I thought back. That was...
Those were on the cover.
It was good. But I mean,
Jonathan Ayash's matric results were excellent.
if you were wondering.
Remember how important matric was? When you thought your matric results were super important? But then you got to varsity and you're like, if I do 55%, it's 5% too much work. That's why I'm like, well, listen, I did a BA, so I mean, that is...
I don't know. If you checked his LinkedIn, I'm not sure if he felt the same way necessarily.
I felt that way about school. I was like, okay, I got into varsity, I'm done. And then varsity, I worked hard.
Oh, did you get super serious? Yeah, I did none of that. I just cruised through the whole time. Were you a good student?
No. No.
Well, I mean, there's a whole documentary based on this. I think it's called Foco Policicar.
I don't know. I never did homework. I was just fine with cruising through like I still am.
We're doing that awesome thing again where we're just talking absolute horseshit. We got Jonathan Ayash. If you don't know who he is, the intro, we said a lot of things.
I didn't mention it in the intro, but he is the co-founder and CEO of Lyft.
Yeah. If you wonder where Lyft is an airline, brand new airline. When did you guys...
Well, not that brand new anymore. I mean, we launched in...
October?
Our first flight was in December of 2020.
Yeah.
So we've been around for 9-10 months.
It's the newest airline.
It's the newest airline in South Africa.
Yeah.
And already making probably the biggest marks, because you sort of have this thing where we're going to get into a lot of this, where you're breaking the norms of how travel should work, because I think that's a bad thing that's happened, is sort of somebody somewhere made one rule and then every single airline followed in suit and they're like, oh, this is how you have to do it now. And you guys have said, but why? Question mark. Why can't we do it like this? And it's a very cool thing. My question that I wanted to start with, the whole thing is, what sort of madmen decide in the middle of a pandemic we're going to start an airline? Because as we know, aviation and the economy were two things that got
smashed
for lack of a better word. They got absolutely destroyed, and you guys went, yeah, fuck it, caution to the wind. Let's start an airline.
I see a gap here.
There's literally no gap. It looked like the center defense structure of the Springboks in the World Cup, and you went, we're gonna go through that gap.
Well, I think that actually COVID did provide the gap. So there were a number of airlines that went out of business in and around that time, and at the same time, there was this huge oversupply of aircraft and people with huge amounts of experience were available. Uh-huh. And so all of that came together to create this gap in the market. Not to say that it wasn't a really, really challenging time and continues to be really challenging, but we were able to get aircraft which were very readily available at very, very good rates and with a huge amount of flexibility built in to the contract. So with the flexibility, you're able to reduce a lot of that risk. So what happens if, as happened in July, they ban leisure travel? It's not a problem. We can cancel flights and we can stop flying.
Yeah.
Traditionally, airlines are not able to do that because they're sitting with aircraft leases and huge commitments that you can't just wind down.
So it's essentially one of those things that if the aircraft isn't working, you're permanently losing, and you guys are a bit more of a safer.
Exactly.
If the aircraft isn't in the air, it's not the biggest loss. And
exactly.
That's, I get you.
Exactly. So we built a huge amount of flexibility into our agreements, and we could do that because there were so many aircraft that were available.
Is that unique in the world, or is there a model that you based it on? And what I actually want to know is, did you have that bright spark in the meeting and
No. So I mean, if we're going back in how this started,
when did it? Sorry, when was like sort of timeline meeting where somebody went, I've got a cool idea, I want to start an airline?
So what happened was a year ago, I was still at Uber. So I joined Uber. We launched the business in South Africa in about 2013, spent 7 years there. July last year, we were in the middle of the pandemic. I was ready. I wanted to just try something new. And I engaged with Giron Novik, who's the co-founder, on a food rescue starter organization that he's involved in called SA Harvest. So in lockdown, we helped collect food through Uber. So we'd been chatting that way and realized that we were actually neighbors almost. And then when I decided to leave, he's a smart guy, very successful, entrepreneurial. I wanted to just pick his brain and see what wisdom I could uncover.
Yeah.
And we started chatting, and he mentioned that he was thinking about starting this airline, which I immediately thought was insane. And he invited me to go to a meeting with him on the business. So I went to a meeting. It was very interesting, and it's an exciting subject to talk about.
There is a mystery about aviation
exactly,
in general.
Exactly. So one meeting turned into two to three to four. So he saw the opportunity and started the whole thing. And that was in July, August.
And so you're telling me, so July, you guys are going, sitting around chatting, going, it would be really cool. Let's start an airline. And your first flight is literally 5 months later. You're like, okay, yeah, we actually got this thing going.
It sounds easy.
It sounds, but it also sounds like one of those things that can get out of control quite quickly. Like, it sounds like a difficult process. No one just goes and buys an aircraft and goes, we're flying now, boys.
Well, they didn't buy any of it.
We didn't buy.
No. I understand that. But I'm saying just the whole process to go that quickly seems...
It was even quicker than that. So we, at that point, we were still negotiating with our partners in the venture, Global Aviation, around how the business would actually run, all that flexibility, and the rates, etc. So that was all a process that took another couple of months. So we only really, from start, to the sale of our first ticket was actually 3 months.
Wow.
So we got up and running even quicker than that, which is insane.
Just to the listeners that don't know what global aviation is, do you mind just explaining how their business works?
So global aviation is, they do what's called wet leasing or chartering. So they didn't have an airline, a scheduled domestic airline like most people would be traveling on. They charter aircraft, so you can rent an aircraft.
How does that
People rent aircrafts. A lot of sports teams, when they need to move up, they rent aircrafts. And wet leasing is if a normal airline needs an extra plane for some reason, then they can rent a plane for a specific amount, one or two flights, and it comes with crew and pilots. And they can help normal airlines out. So that's what they were doing. And then we were chatting to them about diversifying the business and launching an airline, which would help, which makes sense for them because it's using the same skill sets and the same cost base to run another line of revenue. So that's where we started with them.
It's a pretty cool crossroads though, because obviously, like you said, with the pandemic and a lot of things going down, you guys coming up, like you're picking up these skill sets of people that were obviously in aviation for years and years and were basically told, sorry, boys, you're retrenched. You can't anymore. And having this sort of thing is sort of two companies sort of like shaking hands and like patting each other on the back. Like they help each other incrementally on either side.
And it's a very different skill set. I mean, like what Global are really, really good at is flight operating and maintaining aircraft. But to run an airline, and I say this having learned a huge, I knew nothing when...
If you're with SAA or were 5 years ago, listen up.
I knew nothing about the industry outside of being what you know as a passenger. Exactly. And there's a huge amount more that goes into running a domestic airline versus just operating aircraft. Both very, very complicated. And I think that's what the beauty of this whole thing is. We brought guys that are super experienced in one area of business and another group that we were able to find because, as I said, there were a lot of businesses that were in business rescue. And so we got these brilliant, experienced people that could come together and complement each other.
I wanted to ask the question, the name. How did you get to... Because, I mean, like, South African... Like, to be fair, though, like, most South African airline names are... Kalula's cool because it sounds cool to say, but, like, they don't have really any je ne sais quoi to them. Like, it's...
Like
Mango. Like, I mean, what's...
No, but
what?
I mean, overseas, I mean...
I mean South Africa. No, I mean in South Africa specifically, like... Comair, commercial airline, or whatever. I don't know what Comair means. What does Comair mean? Does it mean commercial airline? Where's
competitive?
Competitive airline?
I don't know. I'll.
But are they operators or are they?
Yeah. BA Comair.
So Comair operate Kalula and British Airways domestically in South Africa.
Yeah.
But I'm saying the names are all, let's be honest, trashed here. Where Lyft sort of is what it is.
We want it to be a bit different and thought we would be creative enough to come up with a name, but it's actually hard coming up with a name that we liked and that captured the essence of what we were trying to achieve.
Absolutely.
And in the end, Gid had a really good idea, which was after trying, we tried a few times. And
just give me some of the examples here, please.
We didn't have any very good ones, but the good idea was to put it out to South Africans and have a competition. So we said, we will give a year's worth of flights to whoever comes up with our name.
I entered this competition. And I think
what was your suggestion?
No, I remembered, though, that it was another airline. I said Pegasus Air because I like the idea of Pegasus, but then apparently that's actually another international company that exists. Pegasus Air really exists, and I was like...
Okay, so we couldn't...
No. That was... it was, without a doubt, the shittest idea. Because as I sent it into the competition, wasted my 1 rand 50 SMS, I went and, like, Googled Pegasus Air, and then it's like...
Should have done that first.
That's why I don't run an airline. so you basically just sent it out to the public. You went, hey, I mean, that is pretty much the best groupthink you could ever get.
You know what? We wanted to. I think it was. It was a really challenging time. So we all remember last year.
Yeah.
It was pretty tough, and we at the same time we wanted to show that like there is a bit of hope. We wanted to give people a bit of hope and a bit of something to get excited about again.
Yeah, 100%.
And so that's where the idea came from.
I know what you're thinking, because I'm thinking the same. I need to hear some of the worst suggestions. Surely when you guys got the mail that had the suggestion, you looked at like 4 or 5 and you were like, this is actual.
There were some really bad ones. I think the funny one that I can remember was Planey McPlainface.
Classic.
Well, that's good. Like the Boaty McBoaty.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So,
I mean, that doesn't really come when they. You see, my thing is when it comes to an airline, it has to have that. You know when they got that doom, doom, doom.
Final destination.
Yeah, No, but you know when they have that thing at the airport where it plays a little chime, and yeah, then you have to think about the voice saying the airline's name. So, like, you know, if you have like a Cathay Pacific flight, it sounds, Planey McPlainface doesn't really have the same sort of ring
to
it.
It's always going to be like, I guess you're not really going to do your business trip.
Have you seen how anxious people are at airports as it is? Like, people are anxious traveling. So I don't think every 5 minutes they want to hear that Planey McPlainface. I keep saying flace.
Yeah, you can't even say it. That's
Planey McPlainface.
Well, maybe if it had been Planey McPlainface, that's more South African.
100%. But the problem is now, with that being said, the dumbest rule at the moment is preventing you from doing some of the coolest things. Why are we still not allowed to eat a packet of peanuts on a plane?
You know,
is that a thing? Is it because of the people's allergies and stuff?
No. There's no catering at all
across the board. Yeah.
Bro, they made this rule not to sound funny. I think it was March. I think it was March of 2021. Now this year, where they were like, you not allowed in flight service. You at a stage weren't even allowed to have like a bottle of water with you. They're like, you can't. You're not allowed to sit in an aircraft. And you're not allowed to consume.
And that comes
anything.
From government or ACSA. Yeah.
No. ACSA didn't have anything. It was literally the government were like, Fakile Mbalula, is he transport? He's still transport. He was like, no, you can't have a glass of water on a plane. You're going to spread the Rona.
But at first they said the airplane's air conditioning will sort everything out there. So I thought maybe that would be a lot cooler.
Yeah, you know what? I think, do we think that we can still serve catering and be safe and responsible? Yes, we do. I think they're just trying to keep people safe, but the logic is a little bit off. I mean, you can sit in a packed like restaurant and people are eating with their masks off. I think we can be responsible in air travel and still serve something.
But at least you guys did the smart thing though, because I know you are. Well, I know this because I flew in on Lyft this morning. So, where you at least now, instead of getting it on the plane itself, you can go and collect a free coffee and you can have it.
Oh, cool.
50 meters away from anyone else on planet Earth, because apparently having a coffee is like the worst thing you can possibly do.
I was thinking it's one less thing to think about, obviously. So, you didn't have to.
So, I mean, just going back, I think when we launched, you mentioned travel being stressful. And
yeah. It's incredibly anxiety-inducing.
So I think one of the things that we wanted to do was just try and remove as much of that as possible. It should, like, travel is stressful regardless of who you're traveling with, where you're going.
But it's also fun.
It should be fun.
Yeah.
And I think what we wanted to do was relook at how things were being done. As someone who traveled,
yeah,
I feel it had air travel had become very transactional. I buy a ticket and I'm trying to. The companies are trying to squeeze out every cent that they can from me, whether it's buying extra bags or if you, God forbid, misspell your name, it's another few hundred rand. Why are you paying to change your name?
Yes.
So all of those are good examples of policies and rules that the industry have put in place. Aside from making more money, I'm not quite sure why. So we wanted to really strip all of that away and do things differently with the customer at the center of all of our decisions. So the first thing we wanted to do was like, why is it so difficult to change your flight and why should it cost so much money? So flexibility is completely free with us. You can change, cancel, rebook up to 24 hours before your flight absolutely free.
Incredible.
But so, that is huge, though, because it's, it happens, and it's happened before, where you, like, look, life happens, right? You're going to be driving from city centre Cape Town to the airport. You don't know that the highway might be blocked, and you might have a 2.5 hour delay. But now, because the highway is blocked, and I was going to be there on time, now I must pay an extra 500-600 rand to change my ticket for the next flight. Where it doesn't seem fair. I mean, whereas you guys now, if the next flight is 100 rand more, I just pay 100 rand more. I don't have to sit there and buy a brand new ticket.
Okay.
So it sort of scales it to what the situation was, as far as I remember. Am I right or am I wrong?
No, our teams on the ground, if whenever that kind of thing happens, a team on the ground is absolutely brilliant, and they handle the situation. And they've been briefed. They're not trying to make it as difficult as they can for you and send you. I mean, if you've ever had to buy a ticket, you go to the check-in counter, and then they send you across the airport to the ticket desk, and by the time you've got your ticket, that flight actually closed, and you
have to climb through 6 guys' golf bags, because that's also where they put the fragile stuff. And
I just want to ask, because he said, why is it so expensive to change your name? Did you actually find out why it is?
It's bureaucracy. It's an opportunity to make money, I think.
Okay.
But isn't that a thing, like, because I think the original, like, guys that used to try and shim you for everything were Ryanair, like, back in the day. Like, if you...
And there is, there's a market for that. We don't want to be
associated
with
that.
We don't want to be doing that. I think that there's, the secret we think is, we've built ourselves on a low cost model. That doesn't mean we're a low cost airline. So we can operate 30 to 40% cheaper than any other airline. What we do with that doesn't mean we're going to try and squeeze and offer the lowest service possible. We can still offer a good service, better than others, and still make money. And so that's our philosophy. Operate lean, but offer more than the others.
And I think that's incredibly important, though, because we are in a place now where even the slightest finger given to you by an airline almost feels like the best thing in the world, because
it's a low bar.
Well, that's the problem. It almost does, like you said earlier, it's anxiety inducing. You do feel like you're being shepherded about an airport. There's this whole thing, and if they literally go, here's a packet of Simba chips on the plane, you think that it's your birthday, and you're going absolutely mental because, oh, I didn't deserve this. So anything that you're doing above and beyond because the bar, like you said, has been set so incredibly low that to do just one thing extra for a passenger feels like the biggest thing for them. And it does feel a bit more personalized. It does feel, and I just think that that's the problem, is like a lot of airlines went in this like low cost model, and then they went into this extreme way of trying to find it as low cost as possible, where they're like, okay, we need to also on every single chair take out like the top 2 millimeters of foam, because if you take out the top 2 millimeters, there's a 200. That means 200 by 2 is 400. We've got 400 millimeters of foam that we can put on the next. And you're like, my man, like, why are we arguing about foam that costs like 1,000 rand?
But it sucks, because then it feels like you're doing them a favor. Yeah, or the other way around. They make you feel like they are doing you a favor by letting you fly on their
airline.
But
I think that's exactly the point. Like, we should treat customers as though they're our customers, not that we're doing them a favor.
Yeah.
And I think it's the mindset shift, and it manifests in the quality of the seat that you get, the great coffee. For me, the big thing was I'd never flown and had decent coffee on an aeroplane.
That's a big sell.
This is the big thing. If we're going to do this, we need to have good coffee.
I'm being ugly. You clearly have traveled on an SIA plane. It is notably the worst coffee on planet Earth.
It's still like the 70s coffee percolator.
I tell you something? Like, re-coffee looks like... like top tier, like SIA coffee would put you back to sleep. It's got like a reverse effect.
It's a grudge thing, because especially if you're traveling early in the morning, it's like, I need a coffee, but do I want to drink this?
Do I want to poison myself and hate the rest of my life?
So one of the first things we all agreed was we need to do something different here. So we partnered with Vida e Cafe.
Yeah.
And
also genius.
So, I mean, that was a big win. They obviously make great coffee on the ground, and now you can get it in the air as well. So it's not an espresso, because if you've ever waited in the queue for an espresso, and you can imagine waiting behind 180 people, you would wait a long time. So it's
high quality coffee,
French press.
It's not SIA's coffee.
No, it's really, really good coffee.
It's bloody good coffee. But that's the thing is, you guys have done this also really smart thing because it's almost, we do live in a world now that is social media, pictures, things are always shown, like thrown at you at 1,000 Ks an hour. And you have partnered with some very cool brands, like you said, with the VD Cafe. The other one that I find interesting is, obviously you know I'm going because I can see you smiling, it's Superbalist, which is...
How does that work?
So, essentially, from what I read, because you do research on these things before you do podcasts.
I did research on Jonathan, which I want to get to in a second.
No, because basically Superbalist, like they had this thing, like the air hostesses and the stewards would be dressed in Superbalist clothing that you could purchase, essentially, if you want the look. So you can go onto a plane this month and you'll see the guy wearing like a really nice pair of chinos, some sweet, like, Adidas sneakers.
Nice.
So essentially they become a model of available things on Superbalist, and Superbalist and them are partnered. That's a very important thing though, because we live in a world that is constantly brand orientated, and to have that, I just think is very, very lateral thinking.
Well, you know what, it was also a big part of the customer experience is going to be driven by the people that you interact with. Yes, you're going to buy a ticket and the website needs to work and the technology needs to be seamless. But ultimately, you're going to get to the airport and you're going to speak to one of the ground team or a cabin crew member. And if they are excited and happy and feel comfortable in the clothes that they're coming to work in, it's going to translate into the customer experience. So
100%.
So we thought, rather than being dressed in this polyester suit and I don't know what everyone knows what cabin crew normally dress in,
but that's the thing, it's you mean just going for a woman, for example, I mean, to walk around in a set of high heels all day, you're doing a leg from Joburg to Cape Town, Cape Town to Joburg, Joburg back to Cape Town, you're on your feet for what's that, it's 8 hours essentially of traveling, and to allow them to just wear a pair of sneakers seems just, you know, like the nice thing to do, like as opposed to suddenly having to wear 9-inch stilettos to try and serve chicken.
We flew Lyft as fuck off, and I remember seeing the air host and the hostesses and the crew.
Yeah, yeah.
And they looked like a band, and we kind of looked like each other because everyone was wearing black denim jackets and like jeans. It was cool.
So I mean, we think it portrays who we are better, and it's fun and exciting and. And there's a whole lot of other opportunities to collaborate, and Superbalist is a fantastic brand.
But I think, like you said, that links back to what we said earlier, is there is a sort of fakeness in aviation and travel and the way the travel experience is. Is because all these, like, again, someone in 1975 sat there and wrote a bunch of rules, and they went, if you don't follow these rules, then you're not actually a real airline. And everyone just as dumbly followed suit because people look uncomfortable when they assess this. Look, it's interesting to see someone going at a 35, 40-year-old sort of rule going, is it really a rule? Like, can't we just switch it up?
It's an interesting one. So there's a lot of stuff that's important and that's there for safety reasons.
100%.
And it was interesting to learn as you question these different things. There were some things that I didn't understand that are clearly there for safety reasons.
Like, why do you have to switch your phone off?
Well, that's an interesting one. Like, actually, that's something we're working hard to change. Because
somebody actually sent, we have a lot of questions that are going to come in from, we asked some of our listeners like to send questions you. And that is actually one of them is, why do some airlines allow you to have your phone on during takeoff and landing, and why do some not?
So, I hope I'm not going to make a fool of myself getting the rule wrong, but basically the South African Civil Aviation Authority has this blanket rule that says you have to turn off your device for takeoff and landing.
But that was even with Discmans back in the day.
It's exactly. Like, so maybe at some point there was a safety risk, but there are exemptions that you can apply for, and you have to apply for that exemption, which we have. And now it's just sitting and we're waiting.
So bureaucracy 101,
exactly,
baby.
Exactly. So 100%. It's the most frustrating thing. It's like, if it really was a risk, no, you wouldn't be allowed on with your phone because someone could turn it on and then we'd be in trouble. So clearly there's no risk. And having chatted to a number of pilots that we work with, there isn't a risk. So we're working on the exemption. I agree. It's one of those pet peeves of mine when I'm asked to turn off.
But it's also because we don't necessarily want to listen to the aerostasis spiel, and that's maybe why they do it. You have to now.
No, but to be fair, though, that is like hugely problematic. Though I've always found that should be strangely. Maybe I'm just also a little bit of a stickler for the rules. Is I do find it incredibly, like, just watch this thing. Like, I know it's not a performance art piece, like, that you're going to, you know, but...
Might be something they can innovate, put a beatbox behind it, or...
It's with safety things, I don't think you want to have some... and then pull it, the oxygen will flow freely. No, like, just... That's the one thing that I don't understand, is like, yeah, we know you know, but sometimes it's good to also remind. Yeah. Like, it's... Don't...
That's one of the things that's a safety thing, and you know, you don't realize it, but... It does matter, and it is important to remind people, because when something goes wrong, that's when it's gonna matter, and hopefully it doesn't, but you don't want to be caught there. So agreed. So but there is a balance. Everyone should listen to the safety announcement, but then there's still
you don't
time
have to turn
after
your phone.
Exactly. Yeah. There's still time afterwards. So we'll get there.
Dude, I wanna. I think. How old were you when you became chief operating officer of Uber?
I wasn't chief operating. I was very lucky that when I was looking to move from my previous role in around 2013, Uber was launching here, and a friend of a friend connected me with the guy who was the first employee here. So I started out in operations and had a few different roles, and it ended up helping grow the business across Africa, and headed up the operations team in sub-Saharan Africa. So it was an incredible experience. Got to go to all like countries I would never have visited.
Give us the craziest one. Which is the craziest country you went to in Africa that blew your mind?
So
in a good way.
I think Lagos was the craziest city. So Nigeria,
yeah.
Lagos was the craziest city, and I struggled the most because all their food is super super spicy.
Wow.
And I struggle. So I used to have to go in the morning. I'd order eggs, and basically I got used to just saying, "Well, it doesn't matter what you order, no spice."
I can have a glass of water, no spice. Yeah. Milk, no spice.
Like scrambled, can I have scrambled eggs?
No spice.
Toast.
No spice for the toast, please, spice. Brother.
But it was really an incredible experience. You get to travel across the continent.
The people you meet.
Meet different people, learn about the different cultures and how you meet. It was really, really awesome.
I know in our country there was a bit of a...
Taxi versus Uber.
Clash, like a clash vibe. Did you find that in other African countries as well? And I'm just interested in the problem solving here.
I think it existed everywhere. I mean, even in New York, there was like the...
Of course, it's a worldwide.
Like the yellow taxis in New York wanted to beat the shit out of Uber drivers, and also in London, because remember, if you want to become a taxi driver in London, you have to do... What's that? I forget. There's a name of a test. Like you have to do this thing where you drive around on
the knowledge... Is it called the
knowledge?
You got it.
Yeah. So that's and I mean, so you go and do this thing to become a black cab driver.
But we have GPS now.
But yeah, well.
So it's an industry that doesn't
innovation.
Sorry, I'm just coughing on my water.
No, it's all good.
Doesn't keep up.
Was the water a bit spicy there?
The
right?
Water was a bit spicy. It was all the spice.
It's the red cap, as you can see.
When an industry doesn't keep up with innovation and lags behind, that's when these things happen. I understand. So one of the things we did here was we tried to partner with existing transport providers, with taxis. Not everyone that's going to be keen to jump on board, and I think that is a lot of what caused some of the conflict. But ultimately, I think in any industry, if you're not keeping up with the trends, you're gonna end up being left behind. I mean, if you sold fax machines
today,
when email came out, you're also not in a great position. And ultimately, that trend is going to continue regardless of what industry you're in.
I was thinking about it the other day when my parents had fax machines. They were sending memes to each other. I remember people sending my dad jokes on a fax machine.
Like those Sunday Times comic strips and stuff like that. Yeah. Fax, bro. Like,
classic. That has actually existed even before this.
So the meme, yeah, the meme has always just been...
Yeah, I don't know. Random. Very random. I'm sorry.
Yeah. the one thing I wanted to... You had another question, didn't you?
Well, I was just... Because I remember when Lyft came out, people were saying it's the Uber of airlines. First, I remember, and I don't know why, I just want to mention my pet peeve. I've left stuff in Ubers, and it's very hard to get it back.
Well, it's hard sometimes to get it back, but not impossible. And
true.
And 9 times out of 10, you would be surprised... how rarely someone doesn't get something back.
Sure.
So I think, yeah, it can be tricky sometimes.
I think why I mention it is just because in this age of digitization, the faceless company is sometimes hard to deal with as a consumer, I guess, which is a lot easier if you start your own company, I guess, versus having to use Uber's stuff.
It is the trickiest with Uber, especially as things scale and you're talking about really big numbers. It's really difficult to continue offering the same level of customer support. I think that's where technology becomes important. So it's not super easy to manage all of that, but at least most of the time you'll get your things back. Is someone going to call you back immediately to make sure that you get it there and then? Probably not anymore, but you'll get it.
Sure. I did get it back, though, I have to say.
What was it?
my phone.
which makes it a lot harder.
That's exactly. Then you have to, like, find a computer to log. And if you left your phone, you probably, like, I know you want the piss, so you can't log into your computer. And then you're sitting there going...
I'm not saying it's their fault.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
But if you think about back to 10 years ago, if you left your phone in a taxi.
I've been to the Ricky's taxi depot or whatever a few times, actually.
Okay, there you go. But just thinking back, I mean, that was one of the things that used to blow people's minds. It's like the people would forget things in cars, and then the driver would just rock up at the restaurant and say, hey, I saw that you forgot XYZ, and it would just...
But that's also like the greatest thing of like customer support for your companies, because now... We live in South Africa. If you leave something anywhere, your first assumption is
it's gone.
And I'm going to go back and try. And when it actually comes in, it's the greatest bar. It's the greatest Uber. It's the greatest this person. It just becomes like, because we have such low expectations of things coming back to us that when you actually get it back, you're so stoked. You're like, this is the greatest. He's a good man, this Uber driver, but it's his job. Like, he's just, you know, helping you out.
So I think that was a big part of what we wanted to bring to Lyft was giving back people's phones. But what I learned around customer experience and changing what was the norm in the taxi industry to where we got it, we wanted to do the same and bring that special touch. So, like, one of the things that we've done now around... like damaged baggage, bags get broken. But
that's not necessarily your fault.
It's not an
fault.
Airline, exactly. Yeah. There's many reasons bags can get damaged. So we're working on a system where we'll have if we find your bag is damaged, we'll be there with a replacement bag.
Wow.
That's very cool.
So it's not like, okay, well, your bag was damaged, then you have to fill out paperwork. It's small things like that I hope are going to set us apart.
Another one that also you did that I saw all, like every single girl on my Instagram shared at once, was you guys launched this initiative that you can bring your dog onto the airplane with you, or like your cat.
No cats.
No cats?
No cats, only dogs for now.
Good. Good.
Well, it makes sense to me.
People get, if you love cats, we've got nothing against cats. We're starting with dogs, and we'll see how that goes.
Do you mean the dog doesn't have to be in a thingy?
No, it does.
It doesn't have to go into the hold.
Yeah, yeah.
But now that's another question: is what's the rule on like support animals?
So, I mean, if there is a guide dog or I mean,
what if I have a guard cat?
I don't think you can get a guide cat.
Yeah.
I'm not certain.
The reason I asked this is I've always wondered how far you can stretch the rules with a support animal. Because, like, a lot of, obviously, I don't have anything against people that have any issues, but I was always saying, like, if you have an animal that's outrageous and you have, like, oh, no, I suffer quite badly from anxiety, so I have my Komodo dragon for support. Can you really get through, like, things with that? Really?
I think the lines are blurred. But maybe not for an airline.
No, for an airline, I think it's pretty cut and thrust that you can't take a Komodo dragon onto an aircraft.
Yeah, I don't think lizards. I need to look it up. I think it's.
I have a support Komodo dragon, Jonathan, that I need to know if I can bring onto the next flight with me, just to, you know, settle my anxiety.
Can you imagine the person you sitting next to?
I would honestly, like, I'd love to see this. Like, you're sitting there, window seat. Komodo dragon taking up the whole middle seats like this, and the guy sitting next to you must be in fear.
Terror.
Just absolute terror. So that was one very cool initiative, so, being serious, yeah. So you can take a dog. The other cool thing that you guys did...
They are small dogs, so they have to be able to fit under the seat in front of you. They do need to stay in the in the carry bag.
Yeah, so Great Dane, not
no
allowed.
No Great Danes yet. So you do have to... There are rules around it, but it is a better experience for the animal than being in the hold.
It's a step in a completely... No one ever did this. The fact that you can now have Tinky, your dog, on the plane with you as opposed to having a panic attack because I think people think that, like, the hold is, like, minus 74 degrees and, like, the dog's going to freeze. Like, it's not. But that's not the point. The next thing I was saying is you did a concert in the sky.
We did.
How the hell did you get that right?
So it was tricky, and when we said we were going to do it, and we spoke to Global Aviation, our partners on doing that, I think there was a bit of a panic, because the minute you plug anything into an airplanes are not designed for concerts,
acoustics or whatever.
Yeah. So we had to come up with some, again, problem solving, come up with some creative solution. So we ended up going the direction of a silent disco.
Ah, nice.
Which was. Actually brilliant. So every passenger got a set of wireless headphones so they could participate in the concert or not. And we had our artist was Divine Mahara. He won Zim's Got Talent. He was fantastic. He's such a great guy, and it was so much fun. And basically he was up there with his guitar performing. Everyone could hear. And he launched his album on that flight.
Oh, nice.
Hey, nice.
And the best part of all, it was, as far as we know, the first album launch.
At 32,000.
At 30,000 feet.
At 30,000 foot, yeah.
It was the first time he'd ever flown.
Oh, wow.
So imagine how nervous he was.
Yeah, standing there.
He's like, got to perform his launch his album, and he's never flown before.
At what point did he tell you this, or didn't he?
No, we knew that he hadn't flown before, but he was fantastic. So everyone's got their headphones on. You can see everyone's heads jamming, and
that's so awesome.
It was really. I was worried that you wouldn't be able to hear that well, but it was actually perfect.
Nice.
So we've come to the part in the podcast now where we are both going to launch ideas to you, and you have to now. So my one is first. Mine's very silly because we're on the topic of it. I know a guy that plays in a band that's got a very interesting name. So I think you should have a concert called "Fuck Off with Lyft." Because, I mean, it is essentially like it's, you know, you just fuck off with Lyft and fuck off plays.
Just five guys, drums. It's going to be...
It's not going to work.
The first time I heard about the concert in the sky, I was like, isn't it going to be fucking irritating? You know what I mean? No,
but you see, that's the thing is, because an aircraft is really loud,
but that
and
makes sense
silent
to me
disco,
now.
You can opt in and out of it. No. But fuck off with Lyft, it's a five-piece ensemble band. They're a sort of well-known band in South Africa. They've got a couple songs that have done okay. I just like the name Fuck Off with Lyft. I just think that there's something there.
I'll tell you what, we'll workshop it. We'll do some focus groups and see if it sticks.
I believe that's the way to say fuck off. No. I
believe that's for now.
Yeah, we'll put on the back burner.
Yeah.
We'll put on the back burner. And then you had a far better idea, though.
I think so. We always thought that Duber would be a brilliant bolt-on, maybe, to Uber.
You're going to have to explain that.
It's just weed delivery, but with Uber. It's called Duber.
So this is not a this is not an idea for Lyft.
We're not going to be delivering marijuana.
It's
on your
almost
aircraft.
Like Dragon's Den, kind of.
Okay.
You're the dragon. We're the den.
So it's basically it's Uber delivery, but just weed. That's my idea. That's all I got.
I mean, I suppose you could do that. No.
Someone actually asked. We'll get back to that. I'll ask you later. Okay. That's also like a no.
I suppose. So that one we're going to workshop as well. We're going to put that through the.
I mean.
Or maybe you legalities can aside. The car.
No, or what you can
weed.
Uber. So interesting. Uber have just launched. They've launched. Delivery. So,
yes, yeah.
So now, you know, there's the Uber Eats couriers that would normally bring you food.
I think it's happening anyway.
They will deliver. So weed aside, if you've forgotten something somewhere,
yeah.
I've called an Uber and had it brought to me.
Totally.
So.
But Hunter, you can also on Uber, you can like set a trip, right? That goes to two destinations. So what you do to the Uber is you set it to go to your dealer's house. Dealer can drop off in the Uber and then it delivers to you anyway.
Sure, yeah, I mean just...
But do you just want it to have like... Do you just want Uber
exactly.
to be a thing?
I just like the idea of the graphics.
You know, maybe Uber operates in Amsterdam. Maybe that's where you should be pitching your idea.
It's, I like it. Thanks, man. There.
You guys can share contact details after. I mean, you're going to be a multi-millionaire now. Yeah, I can feel it, Hunter.
I wanted to ask you, is this what you thought you would be doing when you left school, kind of thing?
No.
Okay. Well, not what did all. You?
I don't know. I knew I liked statistics and I enjoyed maths and I always enjoyed business and problem solving, and I started in a consulting firm, which was great because consulting you get exposed to all different businesses and different types of problems, and you also learn the skills that you need, analytical skills that you need to problem solve, that help problem solving. So I started doing that first, and then I've always been the kind of person that just sort of
goes with the flow,
yeah, and take opportunities as they come, as opposed to being like I don't have a 5-year or 10-year plan written out that says I'm going to be here and whenever it is.
Do you think you're a person that wants to be challenged permanently? Like you're not, yes. you're never going to be happy to not have to answer two difficult questions a week.
No, like, no. I think I get bored quickly, which is why I wanted to, try something new, and moved to Uber, and then from Uber ended up.
Operating an airline.
Yeah, that was not...
The way you say it, though, it almost does sound like this weird... Like the one is like it's cars and like, you know, cars drive around and
it's
now you
transportation.
Have to...
It's exactly the same. There's...
it's probably my phone. It's just like... There's so much more, though. Like, with an aircraft, like you said, I just think...
It's much more complicated.
It's the rules that'll catch you.
It's much more complicated. Also... There's reasons that they do a lot of things. So there's also very bad reasons. So some of the customer support things that we've spoken about and punitive policies. But for example, on how they price tickets, and you will have all experienced that you go onto the website and then 2 seconds later the price is something.
Yeah.
Something else. There's reasons that it's called revenue management. There's reasons that happens. We came in and one of my colleagues, Celia, he has a huge amount of experience doing this, and I just remember him, like, he was very, very polite and humored me a lot in the beginning when I came up and was like, we're not going to have all of these different pricing options. We're going to do 3 prices, and that's it. If we had done it, it would have been a disaster. So thankfully, we brought on people that were super experienced and understood that there are good reasons for specific things, and some of my ideas were terrible, and there were other areas where my ideas were okay, but I think that was really important.
But yeah, you were saying, that the prices now are pretty good?
No, the prices are quite expensive.
Oh, okay, I see.
Like just how does across that, the
is
board?
Is it Anfra?
What's supply Anfra? And demand.
Supply and demand. Yeah.
So I think one of the things that's happened during COVID, prices are actually too low.
Are they? I thought you said too high.
No, it sort of goes up and down, but in general, what's happened is people are not traveling, it's made sense. It's we've been in the middle of a pandemic, and if you don't have to travel, people are going to opt for safety, which makes sense. Hopefully now, as more and more people are vaccinated, we can start pulling ourselves out of the dip. But what ends up happening is there are a lot of seats available in the market, and if there's not enough people who want to travel, supply and demand is out of balance, and the price of airfare drops.
Because the price of a flight is pretty much always going to be the same. Well, not always, because you might burn
cost
more fuel.
The cost of a flight.
For you.
For us. Lyft.
For Lyft. So like, that's the thing is, you know, the pilots and the company and everyone knows that on a flight, I'm just throwing numbers here, and I'm obviously not going to be right, is like they burn 2 tons of fuel an hour. And that's, you know, they have to burn 4 tons of fuel in, because it's a 2-hour flight, whatever the case is. Fuel costs that much money. That's a set number until the fuel price obviously changes. The pilots they need to pay are that much. The fees that they have to pay the person that does the tickets at the bottom, and that's where I think, like, you know, you need to get to, you have to make at least, let's say that price is 80,000 Rand one way to Cape Town. You need to, that's the cost price. You need to obviously then
make money
on top of that. So it's obviously you're trying to get around a baseline mark, I assume.
But exactly. On that, how is it going?
It's going really well. We've been blown away by how positive the response has been.
Awesome.
And yeah, I think we're just excited to see the end of COVID, hopefully sooner rather than later, and have more people experience Lyft.
I was actually, we were talking about there was no Uber in Bloemfontein, and I was wondering whether you have, is it just like there's too little?
Supply and demand.
Yeah.
So I think right now we operate between Joburg and Cape Town. It's been phenomenal.
That's Lyft, right?
That's Lyft.
Yeah. And that's
it. You want to know about Uber now? Why is this, like, why wasn't
this
certain?
Why Uber?
Why wasn't this certain?
I kind of know. I just wanted you to say it, but it's fine. Don't worry about it. But yeah,
just say, so there's not enough people in Bloemfontein for Uber to survive.
Well, no, there probably are. You know what? The thing with Uber is, I think it's more about the regulation. If it's so difficult to get around all the red tape and the licensing, it's not worth fighting that for a. But yes, if they clean that up, Uber would be able to operate anyway.
But it was to link in with, you're just doing Cape Town and Joburg for now, right?
Cape Town and Joburg for now. We've moved close to 200,000 people. The thing that I'm
That's
most
insane.
The thing that I was most, coming from outside the industry, I was really worried. It seems super complicated to make sure these planes leave on time. I was really worried when we launched how that was going to look, new airline, new team coming together. That's the thing I think I've been most blown away by. 97% of flights have been on time, up there with all of the big players. SAFair, obviously, on time. Airlink, we're up there with everyone.
But to be fair, though, you're probably better because you have a lower number of flights.
Well, I mean,
technically speaking, though, you like maths and statistics. Doesn't that mean that technically you're still better? Because if you have 200 flights a day and 2 are late, that means that you've got a 99% hit rate.
Yeah, but they'd argue it's harder to keep 200 flights on time than it is to keep. I think the point is, I think two things. All of the other stuff we've been talking about is great. If you're not safe and you're not on time, it's irrelevant. So those are the two things that we really needed to work hard to keep, to get right, and we've done it.
Are there any plans? We just said Joburg, Cape Town. Are there any plans to other routes?
As soon as we see a recovery.
I guess that is the biggest thing, is you don't know how. The problem is, especially like we said, you've been launched in this pandemic, and then the third wave happened, and it's another dip, and we still haven't been able to. Oh, you guys, I said we, like I'm working with you. You've never been able to see where the ceiling actually is. You can't really test things, because I understand that, like, Cape Town, Joburg is one of the, I think, I stand corrected, top 10 busiest.
One of the busiest routes in the world.
In the world.
Really?
Like it's like top 10, if I'm not mistaken. Where it is difficult, and that's why I understand why a lot of airlines don't fly to certain places, and then they charge you premiums. I mean, do you know what the most expensive flight is in like the country? Do you have any? Do you have any idea?
Uppington, isn't it? Cape Town, Uppington.
No.
Where's it?
It's Bloemfontein, Durban.
Oh wow!
It's the highest amount of money spent for the least amount of time in the air. So you spend 3,500 rand a ticket one way.
It's because there's very few people traveling.
And also, they sort of know the market, because the market is who goes to Bloemfontein, except if you're going to play rugby, lawyers.
What?
Because the High Court. I thought this through, okay? It's my conspiracy theory.
Who flies there?
No, it's just lawyers.
But who's the who?
I think it's Link.
Air Link.
I think it is Link, and it is only like a 40-seater plane. And legitimately, it works out to 100 rand a minute in the plane. Because the flight's 35 minutes, 3,500 rand. All you're doing is going over to Drakensberg.
Cape Town George is similar to that. Well, it depends on when, but yeah.
But I don't think it's 3,500 rand.
It's, you know,
one way.
Yeah, it's 3,500 one way, brother. Jeez. It's 7 grand return. Yeah, it's cheaper to fly to London. Yeah, you can fly to Dubai return. Like, that's.
Drive.
That's just. Can I mean, Bloom, well, of course you can. There's the N3. Of course you can drive.
How are the roads? I mean, can you?
They're
you
fine, know what I mean? Because essentially you drive Bloemfontein, you'll drive up, you'll go past. This is regular, and no one knows. Windberg, and then go past Harry Smith and down again. It's quite a long drive. It's like 8 hours. Not that anyone cares about that.
I've been checking the questions. Do you mind if...
Go shoot.
I don't know if this is has anything to do with Lyft necessarily, but someone asked what is the maximum amount of weed that they can carry on them when they fly.
So these are just questions. You ask people to ask...
we're interviewing you.
Yeah. Okay.
But these, you know, just ask us questions about airlines kind of thing.
Okay.
Yeah. So do you know?
What was the question?
How much weed can you carry on you when you fly?
None.
Is it? No, because
that's what's scary. Let's ask this question then. No, how much is the most weed you've carried when you fly?
Well, I mean, it used to be quite scary because obviously it was illegal in general, and now with it being decriminalized,
I actually don't know.
I was just wondering because it doesn't feel like they check for it anymore. I'm sure if you carry
I'm sure if you take a black rubbish bag of marijuana with you, through
just
the security check, I think they might have a problem. But don't you have a?
It's not something. I don't think it's in our FAQ section. I don't think it's been. I don't think. I don't think it's been
asked
before.
Maybe do a bit of work on the website.
Yeah, I think we need to flesh out the FAQs.
We'll link to this podcast after this time.
After we've started Duber, we can do it for the airlines as okay. well.
So basically, though, isn't there a lyric in a song you wrote that has this whole story in it?
I don't think so.
There is.
Okay.
Noch a security check.
Right.
That's you got that in your thing. Like,
thanks.
I listen to your music, bro. You forced me to.
Here's one, but I think you kind of answered it already. But this person said, why do I get charged? This is Jock from Stratton. Why do I get charged for 5 kilogram overweight luggage, but heavily overweight people pay the same ticket price as other passengers?
It's a really good question. I think the truth is you charge a lot of money because... They can. What are you going to do? You're going to say no? I'm not. I'll leave the bag behind.
Yeah.
I think it's just a way to make
exactly.
some extra money.
You basically said that before, right? Yeah.
I got a question.
Yes.
Would you ever consider having a no children flight?
Wow.
Just a no screaming kids flight. Because someone was just wondering, is that ever an option? If I can answer before you answer, it almost sounds counter to what you're trying to give.
Yeah.
To your average customer, that sounds like you're just being...
You know what? My son is two, and until we had him, I didn't understand it. Anyone who's a parent will empathize when there's a crying baby or kid. It's really hard to travel. So you know what? The answer is no. I mean, we're never going to not allow children to travel.
Can we have a section for them alone? Like a place, like one plane has got a play set at the back.
Yeah.
You know, just one.
Well, they do. So there are airlines that have quiet sections, which I think is their nice way of saying there aren't going to be kids in that section.
Shame,
so,
man.
Look, it's something we can look at. So we've done that kind of thing with pets. Mm. So if you don't want to travel and risk being next to someone with a dog, there are areas that there won't be a dog.
Okay.
So we'll take that. We'll take that feedback on board, and we'll add it to the list that we've got running at the moment.
So marijuana, no babies.
Yeah.
What else? Do you have any other questions?
Nothing that he hasn't answered.
The one that I've got here was, I wanted to ask, what are you guys doing differently from a business management perspective that allows them to continue flying in a market that seems...
Is this your question?
...that has seen a number of competitors going bust? So why is everyone else going bust? Basically, why is everyone else seeing their ass and you guys are growing? Well, from a business management perspective, I guess, is where he asked.
So I think there's fundamentally an issue with legacy airline business model. So it's a very cyclical industry, and COVID has, been a really, really huge downturn. And that's when airlines go under, because they've got a lot of debt, they're highly leveraged, and then when demand disappears, you can't pay off your debt. So we've tried to build in this model with flexibility. So in July, leisure travel gets banned, we're canceling flights and putting people on other airlines, but we're not paying for the planes.
Yeah,
so we can sustain. So I think that's the difference in our model. We knew what we were getting into, and we've built our model around that. So as demand recovers, we'll scale up.
So it's essentially like building back to front. It's going, these are all the problems that we're facing. Let's deal with that first. Yeah. And then that is incredibly interesting.
Yeah.
Did you have any other ones? Or you?
I was wondering if any of the pilots have ever reported seeing any UFOs.
Not that I'm aware of, but I will ask.
Also one for the list, maybe.
Passports.
I was wondering whether... I know it's not really for you guys necessarily, but
no,
whether
it's an
you
important
have some...
one. It's an important one. So I think, people need to get vaccinated. It's critical, but it's also going to be very important how that information is
shared or stored.
Exactly,
or whatever.
Because you are almost, it is with any industry or any business, you are almost also a lamb to the slaughter of whatever the person above you, the government, says. If they say you're not allowed to have people flying a plane if they're not vaccinated, you've got to do it.
Well, we need to first find a way, and not just the airline industry, but everyone needs to find a way that we can verify whether someone has been vaccinated or not. I think it's going to be more important for international travel and tourism, which will impact us, because if there are more people coming to South Africa, there'll be more people traveling domestically. But I think it will be a critical next step. And importantly, how does our vaccine database tie in there? It's no use if all these systems are not talking to each other.
Sure, I can just print out a card that looks the same with some kind of
signature. I don't know how to verify that.
Yeah,
and I think, that's the problem with unprecedented times is you have to have all these different things happen, but it's also now how do you make all these things work at the back end? It's obviously there's going to be a way in which it sorts itself out. We somehow always find a way to sort.
Well,
this
globally there are systems that are being used, and I think it'll be for us in South Africa to choose which one we're going with and then start using it.
Okay.
You had a thing that you wanted to ask, though, from yourself, because it does sort of impact you as a human being, about luggage.
but we kind of already spoke about that. I'm not sure how does your stuff work? Do you also pay per bag?
So there's we have an option where you can get a discounted fare if you're not traveling with a bag.
Right.
And you can buy a normal ticket with a bag. That's standard.
Because as a traveling band, our stuff is usually oversized and whatever, and that has been...
So one of the things that we wanted to do was make it as easy as possible. So you'll see, whenever you're traveling, our team's not going to give you a hard time if you're a few kilos over. It's
crazy.
There are limits.
Sure, there's limits, but I mean, just little things like that being a bit more lenient. I mean, that is an amazing change.
It happened to me when I flew a company that I won't name, where I was like 800 grams over. And they were like,
they charge you
250, buddy. So I went, okay, no. I opened it up, put on like two jerseys in the middle of summer. We're coming back from George back to Joburg, sitting there, honest to God, like saunering myself to death to get 800 grams out so that I didn't have to pay 250 rand.
Yeah.
You can call me a cheapskate, but No.
And it does, but it makes you, robots, computer but, says no kind of shit.
You know what it does make you feel like? It does make you feel like a bit of a prick when you're sitting there. Like, you feel like you've committed a crime. If someone's not just a bit lean. Obviously, if you pack 25 kilograms extra, then you're the one being a dick. But you know what I mean? It always feels like with this kind of bureaucracy stuff that they love it. Like, the person at the other end, they're like, yeah, look at you. You didn't read the rules, eh?
That's great
for you. But it's a mindset thing. It's not just about, like, what rules. It's just a empowering our teams to use common sense and treat people like human beings.
It's the least most you can ask for.
But that makes sense, though, because for every one person that's 1 kilogram over, you have another person that's going to be 1 kilogram under. So it's sort of all wool, you know?
Well, there are limits because, as I learned, if the plane is too heavy, it's not going to be able to take off, and then you don't want to be unloading bags. So there are limits, and there's also safety on what people can carry. So I think... between those, we can make it work.
Nothing makes me laugh more than watching a guy, though, like, try convince someone that this is hand luggage, and it's literally like a guy's taking like a bass drum, like, from, he's like, no, can I, it's gonna go in the overhead compartment. You're like, the guy's like, no, mate, like, this is not. And then the guy's trying to con the person, no, the last flight I did, it definitely fit in there. It's like, no, pal.
It's funny because I think you've just described why a lot of these rules come into place. So there's like one guy. We talk about the 2%. It's like the 2% of people that cause a problem, and then a rule gets made that impacts everyone. So we're trying as hard as possible not to make rules for that and just deal with that situation when it happens.
Wow.
And
I think it's amazing, man.
Play the ball, not the man.
Yeah. Sorry, we're running out of time, apparently.
Oh, no, but that's okay. It's been an hour. Do you have any other questions?
Not necessarily, man. I think it's incredible, the ingenuity and the balls it takes to do
I'll
this.
I'll be honest, do you use a wheelbarrow? is that your modus of transport for your big old nutsack that you have to carry
Uber,
around?
I Uber.
Okay, cool. Uber just for his satchel to go to work. Jonathan, it has been an absolute pleasure to learn about the aviation industry, to find out what goes into it, and to sort of have a little cheeky look into an airline that's changing ways in which things have always been done historically. And we obviously wish you nothing but the best.
Thank you.
I think the journey's more important than the goal. No, that's not the right quote to use here. I think...
the journey's as important as the destination.
Yeah. I think in closing, just the last question to say thank you to is... plans for 2022 with Lyft. Obviously, let's say that everything sort of comes to... vaccines in, people can travel again.
Say 2024.
No, I think we will see a bit of a recovery.
December 2022.
Okay.
New routes, regional and domestic. I think we...
ooh, into Africa.
We're definitely looking at it.
Zanzibar. He wants to go for his friend.
to my friend.
To your friend.
At the moment, I don't think Mango is doing that anymore.
No.
Yeah,
so
I don't think Mango's doing much anymore, to be fair, but you know.
So I think new routes and just really building and making sure that we, as we grow, we don't lose sight of all of these things that we've been doing and continue to offer the great customer experience and flexibility that we've built the launch off.
Awesome. Thanks so much, man.
Good guess. Thanks.
Thanks, guys.
And that was another podcast episode from the people of the Costry. Please tell your friends and give us a lekker rating wherever you get your podcasts.